I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, a bill that should be non-controversial is under attack in the name of DEI.
I would prefer quality over quantity any day of the week.
Plus, a hard truth about what the responsibility of schools and teachers is and is not.
As a queer individual, I have not had a welcoming or inclusive experience either as an educator or as a student in our systems.
Plus, an unbelievable excuse for a bill that would ban plastic license plate covers. It sounds like it's not a big deal, but it's the lies that really get to me. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided, our final live show of the week. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We're going to have a focus on education to start the show today. It's not a secret how I feel about some of the priorities that are being pushed in our schools in Washington State, pushed by lawmakers onto districts across the state to try to make them uniform in how they teach DEI, how they fold in gender ideology at a time when our test scores are in the toilet. And we hear these complaints from a lot of parents. Now, it's very rare that parents are willing to speak up on the record at a school board meeting or use their name or do a news interview, but parents not only complain to us about these things all the time via email. When I'm out and about, whether I'm at a yoga class or whether I'm in my neighborhood talking to people who have kids, they all think this stuff is dumb. And I'm thinking, well, how do we still see it being pushed in Olympia? There was a bill that has to do with education that I actually think is great. And in fact, it passed the Senate with bipartisan support unanimously. So if you have a bill on education in today's day and age, an issue that is so, so heated and there's controversy all woven throughout it, if you can get a bill on education that passes through the Senate in Washington State unanimously, chances are that's a pretty good bill. And it's actually an effort I've talked about before because there are members of Congress trying to help with this also on the state level. And it's Senate Bill 5180. It's really relevant because in Washington State, we have a huge military community. And so for that reason, you've got military spouses who might be moving here from out of state. We also have a shortage of teachers. So what Senate Bill 5180 would do is it would make it easier for people who were a teacher in another state to move here and become a teacher here, especially for military families. And so what the bill would allow for is Washington State to join this Interstate Teacher Mobility Compact. And it's an agreement between states who are part of the compact. So it's like, okay, we have a need for this. We have a big military community. We have military spouses who might have been a teacher elsewhere who can move here. So let's become part of that compact and let's do this. So as I mentioned, it passed unanimously in the Senate. And then it goes over to the House Education Committee, where everything is just utter lunacy. But a representative from the Department of Defense spoke in favor of it for one of the reasons I just underlined.
Honored to be before this body today, Tammy Perot with the Department of Defense. Thank you for considering Senate Bill 5180, the Interstate Teacher Mobility Compact. I hope this committee can see this as an opportunity to strengthen your workforce and increase the diversity in the teacher population, which is available to come here to Washington State. I am here in support of this legislation for our military spouses. We estimate that of the over 25,000 military spouses in Washington State, 1,100 of them hold a teaching certificate and are available to teach here in Washington State. This would ease that burden for them.
Great. Love it, especially the spouse of a military member, being able to get them into that field that they've already have a certification in a different state. Sure, they're going to have to get caught up on some things here. Yeah, this isn't saying just plug them into the classroom day one, but this makes a lot of sense, thus the bipartisan support. Well, enter Representative Sharon Santos on the House Education Committee, who had a bone to pick with this particular bill, in part because apparently she believes that the way we instruct teachers and the way that we run our schools in Washington State is so far superior to other states that a teacher from another state can't possibly be a teacher here.
One of the challenges that I have personally as a policymaker and as the former chair of the Educational Opportunity Gap Committee is that we have spent a lot of time in Washington State making sure that we are creating and supporting a professional educator workforce that reflects the diversity of our student body and that has the training to be able to work with neurodiverse students, other students with special needs. And I have been in conversation with the prime sponsor around how do we get to a place where we have legislation that he would like to see enacted while protecting all of the hard work that we have done in the state of Washington over the past decade plus.
How freaking sanctimonious is that? Oh, if you're a teacher in another state, you can't possibly work with neurodiverse kids in the way that our teachers do, that we've trained them to do. We've fostered a very diverse environment. Rep. Santos, do you understand how diverse the military community is? Are you assuming that these are just white military spouses who are going to move here and they can't possibly teach a diverse set of students? And are you suggesting that Washington State is even relatively close to the most diverse state in the country? It's so incredibly sanctimonious. Like, oh, they don't train our teacher. They don't train their teachers like we do here. What's funny about this is I didn't even know that this bill was in the hearing yesterday. We were watching the House Education Committee hearing yesterday morning for a bill we're going to talk about coming up next. And as I'm sitting waiting for the testimony on the bill I was interested in, I heard this. And I heard this exchange with between Representative Sharon Santos and a House staff member. And Representative Santos on this line of questioning was saying, okay, well, if we have to be part of this multi-state compact, can we put these expectations above and beyond other states in place and still be part of the compact?
If this bill moves forward and is enacted with the kinds of, again, protections that we may want to see that protects the work that we've done and that, frankly, strengthens our professional educator workforce, what would happen if the governing body of the Interstate Teacher Mobility Compact felt that it was so far off the uniformity requirements that they didn't feel comfortable? Would it just, all it would mean really is that we wouldn't be able to enter into the compact. Is that correct?
I believe that is the case, that there's a requirement that the enacted legislation be substantially similar to the model legislation. And so depending on whether the commission determined that that was, that those additions, the amendments were not making the full legislation substantially similar, then they may deny admission.
I just can't get over this. An interstate compact for helping teachers who are moving around the country, maybe they have a spouse that's serving in the military, all these other states, it's good enough for all these other states to say, these are the standards that we feel like if a teacher comes into our state, yes, of course, we're willing to take them in. We want to make it easier to hire them and to teach our kids standards that are good enough for every other state, but not in Washington State, where DEI, gender ideology, if that has not been baked into you as a teacher elsewhere, then we don't want you here. You know, Representative Santos was talking about, oh, maybe we, you know, put them through like 5 years of training in the Washington way or whatever it is. And she had asked again this House staffer, could we just like temporarily or provisionally say yes to these teachers from other states and then see if they can be properly indoctrinated in the Washington way before we hire them?
So would provisional acceptance be something that we would that we might be able to?
So there is a requirement that the license that is provided to the applicant be unencumbered, and I'm not finding the definition at the moment, but my recollection is that that means a full license, not a provisional license.
Yeah, nothing Washington state government does is unencumbered. I hate to break it to you. If I were these other states in this teacher compact, I'd be like, Washington can't come. Washington can't join us. In fact, we don't want teachers who've been trained in the Washington way in our schools. I want to play one more cut from, again, Representative Sharon Santos on the Democrat on the House Education Committee. And one of the things that really embarrassed me about this is this is her reaction after hearing from the representatives from the Department of Defense, who are like, we would love for Washington to be part of this program. This would be a great thing for our military spouses. Listen to Representative Santos absolutely crap on the idea of having these military spouses from other states teach here.
We have invested a lot of time and money to make sure that our teachers are well prepared to teach the multicultural, diverse students that occupy the classrooms of Washington State. If it's not going to be the 5 years, and if it's not going to be a provisional, what ideas do you have to ensure that we are not perpetuating some of the bad practices that may be allowed in other states? I'm not going to impugn any specific other state, but that may be allowed in other states that perhaps have not engaged in the deep, deep policy work that Washington State has. Because, frankly, to Tammy's point, I would prefer quality over quantity any day of the week.
I am speechless. When it comes to our teachers, you'd prefer quality over quantity any day of the week. Look, I think we all would to a certain extent. I mean, we have to have enough teachers to staff our schools, certainly, but I talk all the time on this show about wanting quality teachers. But Representative Sharon Santos, what's your definition of quality over quantity? Is your definition of quality, I don't know, a Seattle public school teacher who engages in criminal acts of vandalism?
You don't think that's vandalism, what you're doing?
No, not at all.
It's not vandalism? Boycott Bucks, end the occupation now.
Is your definition of quality a public school teacher who puts up pro-Hamas propaganda outside his classroom and posts on Facebook that Hamas didn't behead anyone and Hamas didn't rape anyone? Is that your definition of quality over quantity? Is your definition of quality over quantity an Olympia School District teacher who engages in a secret email communication with a student who wants to change their gender identity and informs the student to get a personal email account so they can communicate and that student should delete email communications between the two of them? Is that your definition of quality over quantity? Is your definition of quality over quantity celebrating Fidel Castro during an MLK assembly? Is your definition of quality over quantity reading a book called A is for Activist to students to teach them how to go out and protest? To teach them about far left militant organizations in the fourth grade? Is that your idea of quality over quantity? Is it your idea of quality over quantity when teachers in Washington State read books to fourth graders that tell them that a doctor just guessed at their gender when they were born? Is that quality over quantity? And what are these intensive, hard, difficult, meaningful training exercises that we put teachers through in Washington State that these other states just haven't even scratched the surface of? Are they, I don't know, training classes like culturally responsive art instruction? Equity literacy? Is this the kind of deep, systemic work we've done that makes Washington State's teachers so much better than any other teachers in the country? Or is it like in the Olympia School District where you actually hold training sessions where you segregate teachers on the basis of race? And you have BIPOC lunch clubs for elementary school kids and perpetuate racism? Is that what you mean when you say so sanctimoniously, representative, that the spouses of military members who have perhaps spent a decade teaching in another state can't possibly be equipped to teach in the Washington way? If these teachers from out of state have to teach in the Washington way, I'm sure most of them would probably not teach anymore. Incredible levels of sanctimony for a bill that should be non-controversial. Genuinely shameful. All right, I mentioned that I listened to that testimony, just caught my ear as I was waiting for testimony on a different bill that we talked about yesterday, and it's this Senate Bill 5462. If you weren't watching the show yesterday, essentially what it would do is it would mandate across the board kind of a cookie cutter curriculum to quote, promote inclusive learning standards and instructional materials in public schools. And we read the long list of it's got to be, you know, you got to have instructional material that speaks to Native American culture, to Asian American culture, to African American culture, to neurodivergent students, to the LGBTQ community. It's essentially saying, hey, we want every district in the state to teach kids around ideology and inclusiveness the same way that Seattle Public School District does. And it's going to mandate it across the state. Now, there was testimony that happened. If you recall, we started the show yesterday and the testimony hadn't happened yet because they left it till the very end. What they knew was the most controversial bill, left it for the very end, only heard from like 9 people, cut their time from 2 minutes to 90 seconds each. And there was people who were in favor of and people who were against who got the opportunity to testify. Not everyone did. But I know I'm going to get maybe gripe for this, but it's sort of a hard truth that I think we just need to discuss when it comes to the job of our public schools and the job of our educators. So here's a teacher that testified in favor of this. Now, I can't imagine a teacher would ever be allowed to testify against this. Can you imagine a teacher standing in their classroom testifying against a bill for inclusive learning in schools? Like, that teacher would be fired. But here's a teacher who was allowed to testify in favor of it.
For the record, my name is Christy Bennett. I'm a physics teacher at Skyline High School in the Issaquah School District and a member of the Washington Education Association. I am in support of Senate Bill 5462. As a queer individual, I have not had a welcoming or inclusive experience either as an educator or as a student in our systems. I did not come out until I was in my 30s because the lack of representation made it difficult for me to understand my experience. I didn't even know that it was an option for me. I missed out on many experiences, and that's truly devastating for me. Now I work with LGBTQIA plus students, and I hear them share that they feel excluded in most curricula or being included as an afterthought. For example, if they choose to research queer icons such as Harvey Milk or Marsha P. Johnson, our school internet security erroneously blocks it as inappropriate content. When reading the portrait of Dorian Gray, Oscar Wilde's struggles as a homosexual man is mentioned at the end of the unit, robbing the opportunity to connect with the author and main character in this novel. They are told about the gay rights movement as an addendum to other civil rights movements, but not studied in depth. All students deserve to see themselves in their content and feel accepted. I hope you will support Senate Bill 5264. Thank you for your time.
Look, I'm just going to say it. It's a hard truth. It's not the job of schools to make anyone feel comfortable in their sexuality. It's not the job of schools to make anyone feel accepted in their sexuality. Now, look, I think that everyone, and especially kids, should be able to go to school and feel comfortable and like they're not discriminated against. But the idea, as this teacher suggests, that we have to be inclusive of LGBTQ in the curriculum and focus on these things so that a child who might be gay can feel like they can come out of the closet earlier in their life? That's not the job of a school, to make a child feel comfortable enough to come out of the closet. It's not the job of a school for a straight kid to make them feel comfortable in their sexuality. It's not the job of a school or a teacher to even be operating in the realm of sexuality and who a kid decides to sleep with, hopefully later in life. And that's kind of the problem here, is teachers like that believe it is their role, when they should be teaching biology or math or whatever it is, they believe it's their role to make kids feel comfortable in their sexuality. And I just wholeheartedly disagree. Don't make them feel unwelcome based on something like that, obviously. But to build a curriculum around trying to make sure a kid will come out earlier is genuinely bizarre. That these are the sorts of things that we're prioritizing and valuing in an education system that is losing students by the day, in an education system that's failing in the basics. Stuff like this and a mentality like what that teacher has is insane. And again, I would say, I don't think that there would be a teacher who would be allowed to, from their classroom, testify against that bill. I can't imagine what the consequences of that would be. Now, there was also some testimony against this, and there was a common theme that I heard. So there was a lot of school board directors from elsewhere in the state, you know, eastern side of the state, who testified. And they made a couple, I think, good points. One of them being that there's already so many requirements around inclusivity and DEI, et cetera, for teachers, that some of this is just redundant. Like, it's a feel-good bill that's not necessary. And teachers are already making kids feel included in their classroom. Again, bills like this assign, like, the worst intentions to teachers. Oh, if we don't force teachers to, all of their lessons are going to be on white men. And there's not going to be any diversity and any sort of interest, any talk of African Americans. It'll be as if Black people and Native Americans and LGBTQ people don't exist. It's like, no, this stuff is happening in schools. Books these days reflect that much more than books of yesteryear. And then they also say that this sort of stuff and focusing on it is needlessly adding to the divisiveness.
My name is Trish Huddleston, and I am a school board director in Woodland and also on the WASDA Legislative Committee. The state already requires us to remove bias and include marginalized communities when selecting curriculums and instructional materials. In my district, we are already implementing most of what this bill requires, so there would be minimal financial cost. However, I believe there will be a major cost with our community over this divisive topic. We all know this is a charged topic, which brings me to my last concern, which is this bill making it more difficult to represent our communities, resulting in less engagement and taking the focus away from supporting our students.
These requirements would be costly for our district. Out in District 7 is where I live, outside of Spokane. And our districts are already struggling to keep up and update their curriculum, as well as implementing the new requirements for education that this body had already passed the last 2 to 3 years. The term inclusive has been dividing our country and communities, causing issues and negatively impacting our schools. This bill will further that division and push parents out of our public schools, which is not where we're trying to put them.
Yeah, inclusivity is fine. Inclusivity is a great thing. Making sure everyone feels included on its face is not a bad thing. I would never say that it is. But when you take that to the lengths that it's being taken to in Washington State, it's just racism at that point. I mean, and it's bigoted. I mean, when you have, again, classes for elementary school kids or clubs, lunch clubs that you can't come if you're white, white kid can't come, or you have special training lessons for Black teachers or whatever it is, that's excluding people. That's not inclusive. So the definition of inclusive that's being pushed is sick and twisted. Okay, so I will be tracking that bill and seeing what happens with that. I do want to quickly, we'll have our weekly episode of Politics Unpacked tomorrow. I hope you're enjoying that, by the way. Give you a little weekly recap of what happens during the legislative session. Just really quickly, though. A few bills we've talked about on the show that are dead. The Holocaust bill appears dead. Holocaust education bill. Can't even get that thing through. If you remember, it had been altered and wokeified in the House, and it seems like there is no appetite from Senate Republicans with that added amendment to pass it. They want to push back against that, and I think Democrats would just rather not pass it at all and not have improved Holocaust education. So that doesn't appear to be going anywhere. Also, our poor pledge education bill. Why? Why? Here we're talking about pushing all these other things on kids. You're already, the pledge is already being set in schools, and all this would do is explain to kids why they say it. All these other things we just talked about, they're trying to shove into classrooms, and you're not going to help them understand that it's this anti-American animus. That's what it is.
It really is.
100%. Mm-hmm. Man, Yeah, you just disappointed some eighth graders.
This whole segment.
Shameful.
I don't think my eyes can roll back any further.
Your eyes
hurting.
I was over there at Nicole, our first segment. She's like, because you hadn't heard those cuts,
I
right?
I hadn't heard them.
She was just head in hands. It was like, oh my God, these people are lunatics. A good death, positive death. The Ridgeway Bill, as it's been referred to, the one that would give criminals in Washington State who are serving time in prison, even up to Gary Ridgeway, the right to vote while incarcerated, the right to serve on a jury, the right to run for public office. That's dead this session. Thankfully, you take the wins where you can get them. However, a bill that's still alive is, in my opinion, just as bad, because with the Ridgeway Bill, I didn't really see how that would work out in practice. I mean, how are you going to get like a killer out of prison to go serve on a jury? They're never going to be selected for a jury. There's a lot of issues with that bill that you can put it on paper, but I don't know how it's actually carried out.
It would probably just cost us money.
Cost us money. Mm-hmm. This bill, I can see how it's going to be carried out. And I've talked about this way back at the beginning of the legislative session, and it has continued to make movement. House Bill 2001, it's an act relating to providing judicial discretion to modify sentences in the interests of justice, basically letting people out of prison early in the interests of justice. And what this would do is give every sentencing judge the power of clemency. It would give every sentencing judge a power that up until now is reserved to the governor, which governors tend to use pretty sparingly to lessen someone's sentence, to get them out of prison. And basically, after 10 years, most individuals, regardless of how heinous the crime you committed was, could go back to a sentencing judge and argue that their sentence should be cut short. And one of the saddest things about that is there's no finality there for victims. Usually as the victim of a crime, if you're alive, and the family member of a victim who is not alive, there's some finality there in sentencing where you know, like, okay, this is how much time they're going to spend behind bars. You know, there might be a little give and take there based on good behavior or whatever it is. But if at any moment they could petition a judge and continue to do that, man, that is a horrible thing to put victims and to put families through.
Awful stuff. To show up to court to fight against it.
Yeah,
Just like parole.
Right. But. We don't have parole in Washington, but we do have the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board, which that's a fancy word for kind of like, should we let them out early, right? We can petition, but this would take it above and beyond that. And it wouldn't just be in the hands of a board. It would be in the hands of individual judges who mm-hmm. could make that decision. And think of all the activist judges that we've done stories
exactly.
on. So you're going to have criminals, dangerous criminals getting out early left and right if this thing goes through. It's wild stuff. Okay, coming up next, we want to talk briefly about the shooting that happened at the Super Bowl parade in Kansas City and how the media immediately kid-gloved it once they realized the race of the suspects, which is not a surprise. First, I have been encouraging you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. I just heard from one of our wonderful subscribers, Daniel, who talked to them on the phone, did the First Mark Challenge, and he said, they actually told me my insurance was pretty good and just needed a couple tweaks. And that's what I love about First Mark, is they have no reason to sell you on becoming a member of the First Mark family. They will give you honest advice. You schedule time for the First Mark Challenge. You talk to them about your current insurance and your insurance needs. Sometimes they'll come back and say, you've got great insurance and you're getting it at a bargain. You don't need us at all. And sometimes, like with Mike and I, we were way underinsured. So they'll come back with different suggestions and you can decide, hey, do I want to have my insurance run through First Mark? I'm never going to pay them anything to do it. So why not? Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark. And he says one of the big reasons people come to them is it can be really time consuming to shop around for insurance on your own.
You want to know you're getting a competitive price. How else do you do that unless you're willing to yourself shop 10 different insurance companies to find out?
Right.
Right. Do you trust your agent at one of these captive carriers? So get a competitive price. And the best way to do that is have a broker, again, like First Mark, shop the market for you.
Yeah. And you might think, well, I can do that on one of those little internet sites where I plug in how much I can afford to pay every month, and then it'll shop the market for you. Yeah, I can guarantee that you're not getting the sort of insurance that's going to meet your needs doing something like that. So take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. You never, ever pay First Mark for their services. The money they can save you, the time they can save you throughout your life is immense. So do what I've done, so many others have done. Become a member of the First Mark family today. All right, there was a shooting at the Chiefs Super Bowl parade in Kansas City, Missouri, which is horrifying as it is. I mean, every time, you know, we've had a Super Bowl parade here, anytime you've got, in this case, it was like a million people in the core of a city, you have obviously immense public safety challenges. There's a lot of law enforcement. You're always on the lookout for an act of terrorism or some sort of mass shooting situation or whatever it is. Rarely does that happen and come to fruition. And so as the reports of this first started circulating, I was watching, Nicole and I yesterday, we're sitting here post-show, watching some of this unfold, and like the sports analysts who were up on their set who just saw people running and were like, we need to hide under the desk. I mean, I imagine that this is very, very horrifying. But then a lot of time went by and the media wasn't like naming a suspected shooter, and there didn't seem to be a lot of information. And then I realized, oh, it's because the suspects are Black. Sorry. That's what it is. Can you imagine if this had been a white shooter? I mean, because how many people? One person died and like 20 people were shot, including children.
Like 12 kids.
Yeah. If this had been a, you know, lone white shooter who'd been going through methodically shooting people, I mean, this would be wall to wall. They would have had their picture out there. They would have had their name out there. They would have been speaking to people who've known them at every stage in their life, somebody who went to elementary school with them. And rightfully so. I mean, I think that if you have an active shooter, you deserve to be named. You deserve the scrutiny and all of that. So, but what really weirds me out is when you have a shooting like this in a situation like this, and because it's, oh, in this case, I mean, honestly, I think it's a dispute, some sort of gang violence situation is what it seems like, because there's multiple shooters involved in some sort of dispute, then it's like, oh, well, that's just normal. That's like in Chicago, where they just ignore all the people who die there in gang violence, because it's not some white kid with a gun who went into a place and shot a bunch of people, which happens much more rarely. Here's from the Associated Press. Shooting after Chiefs Super Bowl parade seemed to stem from dispute among several people, police say. The mass shooting that unfolded amid throngs of people at the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl celebration appeared to stem from a dispute between several people, authorities said Thursday. Police Chief Stacey Graves said that the 22 people injured in the shooting ranged between the ages of 8 and 47, half of whom were under the age of 16. A mother of two was also killed. We'll get to that coming up in a second. Three people were detained, including two juveniles. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. Juveniles with a gun getting into a dispute, shooting at one another, not caring where their bullets go. We've seen that in Washington State as well. And the response has been, oh, give them a slap on the wrist. And we wonder why they continue to do these things and why they have no regard for human life. No charges have been filed yet. Police are calling for witnesses, which there should be a ton. So the woman who died was actually a longtime radio host in Kansas City. Just horrifying. KKFI put out a post before the police even identified who the victim was. Her name was Lisa Lopez Galvin. They said, it's with sincere sadness and extremely heavy and broken hearts that we let our community know that DJ Lisa Lopez Galvin, host of Taste of Tejano, lost her life today in the shooting at the KC Chiefs rally. Our hearts and prayers are with her family. We encourage anyone who feels they saw something to reach out to law enforcement.
Apparently her son was also hit in the leg.
Yeah, and it seems like that was, again,
she was,
I mean, when you
family.
Get, how many drive-by shootings have we had in Washington where a stray bullet, there's a stray bullet that's killed a one-year-old before, there's a stray bullet that's gone into a business in South King County and killed someone who is sitting at their desk. When you have, and that's why this rings so true to gang violence for me, multiple people firing at each other, no regard for where their bullets fly, and then immediately the media goes from, oh, you know, news of a shooting, people fleeing, to all the fear-mongering rage starts about, oh, guns in America, semi-automatic rifles, and everybody's like gearing up for it to be some crazy white kid who was out killing football fans. And then that's not what happens. And then you see that narrative be buried. When it should not matter. When there is a mass shooting and you have this many people who are shot, when you have someone die, it shouldn't matter if it's a lone white gunman with a rifle or if it's three Black youth who are shooting at each other. The fact that the media treats those so differently, as if Lisa Lopez Galvin's life and the tragedy of losing it somehow means less if it was a stray bullet from a gang shooting than if it was someone out there methodically targeting out people to kill, is so indicative of what's wrong in this country. There is no way that their names and their faces and their social media posts would not be all over the place if it had been a lone gunman. It's absurd. I don't even know where to go from here. You know, and all these calls, there'll be continued calls. I'm sure there already are members of Congress who are like, ban assault weapons. When I think these were handguns, which it sounds like, I doubt that they were walking around with, you know, an AR-15 up under their jacket or something at a rally. I mean, some of them had like Chiefs gear on. So there's no consistency on this issue. And that's what really bothers me. I mean, I want to do something about the shootings in our country and the violence in our country. We talk about it all the time. But when you completely lack moral consistency on the issue, when you're in Washington State and you're passing bans on quote unquote assault rifles and completely ignoring that they account for a tiny little fraction of the number of fatal shootings, and then you're giving deals, sweetheart deals, to people who actually use guns to kill someone, I can't take you seriously. I just can't do it. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. It's on a weird topic, license plate covers. And I actually agree with the bill, but it's the weird, unnecessary lies being told by Democrats about why they're pushing for this bill that I will not abide. First, we're going to talk to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com about the state of the real estate market. 2023 was not great in the real estate market, and 2024 hasn't been great thus far. However, the Fed has forecasted rate cuts, and that would obviously help by bringing a bunch of buyers in. So it would be a good time to be a home seller if a rate cut manifests or multiple this year. And Wes says, you know, it's an election year. Typically, the president wants people to believe or think at least that everything is going well. And so if not for any other reason but that, maybe there will be a rate cut this year. That's his expectation.
They say that the Fed and the presidency, you know, they're not supposed to influence each other. But let's be honest. Come on. They're not supposed to.
Right.
But they do. So, you know, Biden's administration is going to do whatever they can to put whatever pressure they can, you know, on the Fed to keep lowering interest rates down, because that's what it's going to make the American population happy and allow people to get into ownership, or at least give them, you know, give them that peace of mind.
Yeah. And so the best thing to do is, if you are thinking about selling your home in the near future, I'm talking about like today to 6 months or even a year from now, it does not hurt to get your home ready now. And then day one, as soon as rates drop and all that demand rushes into the market, you can be ready to take advantage of it. So reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Ask them about their listing boost concierge service if you know that you need some cosmetic updates to your home, because he can actually manage that project for you and take care of it up front. And start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Democrats keep pretending that they care about public safety when it's really just about money. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Oop. All right, this was not on my radar until I saw an utterly idiotic video posted to social media, actually from one of my state representatives. I have feeling that I might write a strongly worded concerned citizen letter on this one as a constituent. Let me introduce you to House Bill 1963. It is an act relating to prohibiting license plate covers. Now, that's not the little license plate covers, you know, you get from your dealer, or like, you know, dog mom, cat
frames.
Mom.
Those are frames.
Frames. That's a frame. So you can still have your little frame. It's about covers that are sold online aftermarket that are plastic and that go over the entirety of your license plate. And sometimes, depending on the angle that someone is looking at your license plate from, they can cover or shade your license plate number and make it more difficult to read. So Representative Ramos, who's a Democrat, they put out this, the House Democratic Caucus put out this video where he's talking about why Democrats feel so strongly about banning those covers.
Have you ever seen cars that have plastic covers over the license plates? Well, believe it or not, that makes that license plate unreadable. And police officers can't read it either the way they read plates. So it makes it illegible, which we want to make illegal, because when an officer pulls over a vehicle, we want to make sure he knows who he's pulling over. He can read that license plate, have advance information for his safety before he reaches that vehicle. Our law enforcement officers need to know who they're pulling over for their safety. That's the most important part here. But we also want to make sure people have an identifiable vehicle, which is a requirement of law, and that if they do something wrong or they deserve a fine or fee, their license plate can be read. We have accountability for them in the system.
Oh, isn't that pleasant? Putting people first. I don't disagree. Hey, I want police officers to be able to read someone's license plate. Of course I do. If you did something wrong, yeah, I want you to get a fine or a fee, as long as it's reasonable. But That's not what this is about. And we know that, right? I mean, this is a party that has made it nearly impossible for police to pursue even violent criminals. This is a party that pushed a lot last session for a bill that would have made it so police officers couldn't even pull someone over for a violation like this, for an equipment violation, because it's just leading the way to biased policing, and it's a crime of poverty if you've got a crack in your windshield or you've got a tail light out or something like that. So Democrats are already on the record as saying, like, they would never want police to pull someone over for something like this, an equipment issue. And they don't even want police to pursue someone who just carried out, like, an armed robbery. So what are they talking about here? That this is about helping police officers and about accountability and making sure people are paying fines that they might get if an officer pulls them over. That doesn't make any sense to me. And it's because that's not why they want this bill. The bill is not about public safety. The bill is about making sure that they can continue to collect money. Because these license plate covers are used by some people to obscure their license plates so they can avoid paying tolls, or they can avoid them being read by traffic cameras and speed cameras. This is something that's been covered on the news. Here's a news story clip out of Charlotte, North Carolina.
License plate covers like these are sold all over the internet. They're marketed as a way to disguise your license plate number from cameras and from police. But local law enforcement are catching on, and this little piece of plastic could land you in big trouble.
Drivers and law enforcement soon noticed something strange. Cameras designed to catch plate numbers were suddenly logging some abnormalities.
From the top,
there are videos all over YouTube.
Completely blacked out and invisible.
Showing off how these products work.
One half of your plate is always going to be visible. The other half will be obscured.
All over the World Wide Web.
That is sweet.
That sell them.
Yeah. So I agree with the bill. I don't think that you should be obstructing your license plate for a variety of reasons. If the rest of the traveling public is paying their tolls, as stupid and overpriced as those tolls might be, I don't believe that you should be able to put a plastic thing on your license plate that gets you out of it, because I am nothing if not a law and order human being. However, what bothers me are the lies. And on top of them wanting to make sure that you are paying these very, very steep tolls, remember the bill that Governor Inslee signed into law last session, a bill that was quite controversial, that will install speed cameras along Washington state highways, automated speed cameras. So this is about them putting these tools in place to bring more money coming into the state coffers, and they don't want individuals to get crafty and to obscure their license plate to get out of paying those tolls that they're going to use for their pet projects, which is fine, but be honest about it. Don't tell us you care about public safety and making sure police have the tools they need to hold criminals accountable. We know that that's not true. Your own words and actions show that's not true. Just say you shouldn't be able to put a plastic cover over your license plate and get out of paying a toll or get out of paying a speeding ticket. Because that would be reasonable. But when you lie about it, it makes me think that you're being unreasonable. Unbelievable. All right. We will get to national news coming up in just a moment. Also, we have my sister this week in Florida Report. But we thought we'd bring in Zach Abraham a little earlier on than usual in the show today. You know, I've been seeing all these headlines about job cuts. And certainly we've seen that in this market. Amazon, for instance, has been cutting a ton of jobs. And there's always, whenever you have big companies that are laying people off, this concern about what that means for the economy. Layoffs surged 136% in January. Second highest level on record. We know there are a lot of big companies that are cutting jobs. I mean, Nicole and I have had a friend who was laid off. Amazon's been laying off a lot of workers. Citigroup, UPS. What should we make of that?
So what that's pointing to, in our opinion, is really the bifurcated nature of this economy, right? There are really signs of strength, but remember how we were talking to you that all of the economic strength, people go, well, it's a really strong economy. And you look at them and go, well, you're pumping $2.1 trillion into it a year, yeah, right? So your definition of a strong economy isn't mine, right? You're looking at a four-banger, four-cylinder engine that they hooked up a nitrous oxide tank to, right, and pumped out 800 horsepower, and you guys all act like a miracle has happened, and now we're looking at a Chevy big block V8. No. It's just it's a four-banger on nitrous oxide, right? You pull that out of there, and it's going to decelerate. A lot of this, the vast majority of this economic strength is purely narrative and printed money.
I didn't know you were a car guy, Zach. You've been watching too much Fast and Furious or what?
I'm an analogy guy, and that analogy I think is really funny because it is like that where you're like, look at this economic strength. And you're like, if we dump enough money into any economy, we can make it look strong.
Yeah. So we had seen, so we have a kind of little pre-discussion before we have you on every Thursday and talk about some of the headlines that are out. And we had seen this one about all these job cuts. And you had actually said, it was interesting because you said, speaking of, my team and I were just looking at this graph. And what you say the graph shows is a disconnect between the unemployment rate and the actual strength of the labor market. Dumb that down for me.
So what this graph really shows us is I think so many of your listeners can understand, wait a second, what we're seeing on the ground and what we're being told, there's a giant disconnect here, right? Well, so one of those times when you recognize the noise that can be in unemployment numbers, for instance, think of how many people across the country have moved and quit jobs and started new jobs, right? You've seen the most instant migration phenomena in the history of our country happened via COVID. Okay, naturally, that's going to throw a lot of noise into job markets, right? People moving, leaving, it's going to make consumer spending look really wonky. Why? Because when people move, they spend a lot of money, right? So there's all this noise. So one of the things that we try to do in these periods of noise is we try to look at other indicators that some people refer to as leading economic indicators or things that are less subject to noise. And we like to look at hours worked, right? Because hours worked is not subject to all these machinations of the unemployment rate. It's just much more of a hard piece of data, okay? And so when you see hours worked going down, it is not necessarily a horrible sign, but it is absolutely not a good sign. And it's not a sign of it's not something that you should see in a job market that is supposedly running at full employment, okay? Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is lowering hour of work numbers, especially the further you drop below 40, what it's indicating is less overtime being worked, right? It's indicating more part-time jobs being had, right? Or people using that, right? Because it's a part-time job. By definition, you're not making the same wage as a 40-hour a week worker. Right. And so all these things factor in. So like, let's say 10-15% of the workforce over the space of 2 years needs to go out and get a part time job. Hours worked will go down. Mm. Right. And while that's not a horrible sign, if somebody's taking on an extra job to make a little extra money, it's not because they're killing it. Right. Yeah. It's not because they're knocking the cover off the ball. It's because they can't afford to live off of what they're making. So hours worked is really one of those things that we look at. And what's incredible is if you look at the chart, we right now, everybody talks about the booming economy, our hours worked levels are at the same levels of the last two recessions.
Yeah,
right?
If you look it up to 2009, I mean, obviously it dipped pretty low to around like 33, but this is consistent with the beginning of that recession.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's what you're looking at, right? So it's not the worst we've seen, but it's certainly not what you'd expect to correspond with all the stuff we're being told.
Yeah. And I always find it fascinating. You know, I am not an expert in economic outlooks or anything like that. And I love kind of hearing about what Zach and his team monitor and all the things they're looking at that you might not hear on the national news as, oh, is the economy doing good or not? And there's these little things that you're paying attention to like that, that when you look at the data that he provides, it's sort of like, wow, we do have a lot of similarities with the last time that there was a recession. I do suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital. They specialize in risk management. So we've worked at all of us are working very hard toward retirement. And in a year like this, where there's so much nonsensical stuff happening with the economy, it is really important to manage your risk. So their portfolio review. It'll just tell you, are you overexposed to risk? There's no obligation. They don't even let you invest with them at their first meeting. So whether you become a client or not, you'll leave much more informed about the risks to your retirement. You can schedule your review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, dipping outside of Washington State. I wanted to do this yesterday. We just ran out of time. So you know how some cities are asking people to house migrants who are bussed in or asylum seekers or whatever it is, and they're running out of places, like, oh, trying to put them in the schools, trying to put them in the community centers. And they're coming out and saying, you know, if you as a citizen want to provide an extra room to one of these asylum seekers, we would really love that as the government. And I'm thinking, no way in hell anyone does this. I mean, maybe in Seattle you might have some feel-good people who do it, but some families in the Boston area have taken the government up on this request, including a woman who is very happy to have a little extra help around her home. Here's the clip from NBC Boston.
It's a delight, and it's really fun having them. What I realized is there's so much prejudice against refugees, mostly because people don't know them.
Lisa says she feels like she has her own personal chef, as Wildande loves cooking.
¿Te gusta la ocupación?
Sí.
So you got a slave.
I mean, she's not paying her.
You got a slave. I mean, you love, I just love, can you play that clip again? Because I just love how she's like the epitome of who I picture agreeing to take someone into their home.
It's a delight. And it's really fun having them. What I realized is there's so much prejudice against refugees, mostly because people don't know them.
Lisa says she feels like she has her own personal chef, as Wildande loves cooking.
¿Te gusta la ocupación?
Sí. Stop. Oh, it's a delight. What I found is that people, you know, don't like refugees because they've never gotten to know them. She cooks great meals. That's wild. Yeah, you got a slave. That's not very woke. Somebody said, oh, you basically wokeified slavery.
Right.
That was a funny tweet I saw on this. Ridiculous. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, would you ever consider taking an asylum seeker into your home? Maybe if the government does a little shout out saying, hey, we don't have enough space. Let's see what some Patreon folks said about this. So most people saying no. And I realize that there's a lot of room open to interpretation. Like what kind of, you know, is it a woman? Is it a child? Is it a single man asylum seeker? Bev says there are a number of reasons she voted no. I'm very selective on who is even allowed in my house. I'm afraid the asylum seeker may trip over their own feet and sue me. The worst part is our government would let them. Mm-hmm. I'm also, of course, concerned about safety. Elise says, just doesn't sit well with me. Charles says, with as backward as the state of Washington is, I could see the legislature passing a law to give the guests more rights than the homeowners so they can't be forced out of your home. Oh, 100%.
Oh, they'd be squatters, yeah. Yep. You can't make them leave. We don't have any place for them.
Yeah, of course, they'd likely be able to occupy the home and force out the homeowner. And that might sound crazy, but I mean, look at what's happening with some landlords. Like, why would that be any different, right? 100% of people on X right now are saying no. Reagan says, I'd never risk my family's safety for the sake of a stranger. How do you know their claim is legitimate? It's the same reason you wouldn't pick up a hitchhiker. I'm not going to pick up a hitchhiker. They might be perfectly well-intentioned, and it's factor. Just like some bro who's like, hey, man, you going to the coast, and I want to go to California. Is that, I don't know.
Hang loose,
bro. I'm working on my impressions lately, and I feel like I'm getting pretty good at them. And it might seem totally harmless, but you just never know. And it's that uncertainty that I think a lot of people wouldn't be comfortable bringing someone into their home.
But I also like how the media is just playing right into this.
Yeah. Oh, but isn't this
here,
nice?
Look at what you could have. You could have your own personal chef.
That sounds great. You're telling me it's not illegal? It's not slavery? Wow. Just crazy levels of insanity in our country right now. Speaking of crazy levels of insanity, Florida sometimes has some crazy stories. And there's a one out of Florida. There's some body camera footage that was released. And I part of me feels very bad for this police officer, but who discharged his weapon because he believed he heard gunshots. Turned out it was not gunshots, not even close. So let's talk about that and other stories in our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, nice hat. You're rare. Hey. You don't usually wear a hat.
I wear them a lot when I'm out shooting because of the sunshine, but I'm wearing it right now because I wore it all morning and I'm going to have hat hair if I take it off.
Let's specify shooting photography, not shooting yes. people.
The amount of times I've wound up in Facebook jail because I refer to my job as like shooting things.
Yes.
It's pretty bad. I got to stop saying that.
Yeah.
Photographing.
Photographing stuff. A family, not shooting. All right. Yes. I don't even want to say it because I don't want to end up in YouTube jail. Okay. There's an interesting bill that got unanimous support in Florida as you guys deal with your legislative session as well. But I am really torn on it. So essentially, it would help high school dropouts pursue secondary education like the trades.
Yeah, exactly. So HB 7521, I think it's called, would create a program that basically allows high school dropouts age 16 to 21 to get funding to go to trade school and career schools and get certifications and diplomas to allow them to re-enter the workforce and basically just become, you know, not let the fact that they left, you know, general education behind be their end all of their life and set them on a wrong course. It kind of just gives them the opportunity to jump back into the game and become productive members of society and support their families and what have you.
Yeah, and come up with a career as opposed to maybe if you drop out of high school, I don't think it's the case for everyone, but if you drop out of a high school, maybe not having the ability to get on a career, on a job path that leads to a sustainable career. So I struggle with it because it sounds like a societal good, right? We want if high school dropouts get an education in the trades through this that they otherwise could not afford and they enter the workforce, whatever, that's a societal good. But I feel like it almost gives them more than someone who did finish high school, you know, who maybe wants to pursue a secondary education and they worked hard in high school, they saw it through and they're not getting anything, you know, from the state. And so that's a push and pull I'm really struggling with.
Yeah, and I can understand that. And there's a lot of argument in like, you know, in the House and the Senate right now about that. I kind of like this because I do think that some people do so much better in the workforce than in the education system. Mm. I think some people are, you know, very driven when it comes to like working, making money and just getting to it. And I think that, you know, school, especially coming to like 16, 17, 18 years old, if you're just already not doing well in school and you just see yourself like maybe already, I just want to go into a career. I want to get a certificate for a career or a trade school. Then maybe it gives them the opportunity to start that a little bit sooner than having to pursue all the way through graduation age of 18 or so years old and just jump right into it. So I'm kind of okay with it just based on how times are kind of changing, the education system's changing, and like the requirements to get jobs is changing. So I think I'm personally okay with it. Of course, it comes down to like people's own preference and whatnot. And if you really want to pursue that 4-year degree and college scholarships, you got to finish school and you got to get good grades.
Yeah.
But even this program requires a certain GPA attendance rate, and you have to finish these programs in 3 years in order for the GATE program to cover tuitions and fees for you.
Yes, you can't get this money and then go there and just dick around, for lack of a better phrase. Nicole's looking at me. I don't know. I couldn't think of anything else. I don't know. I struggle. I think everyone should finish high school, and maybe you give them the opportunity to get, you know, what do you call it when you don't actually get your GED, you know, and do it that way. I struggle with it. I'm actually surprised it got unanimous support so far in Florida. I would think more conservatives might be opposed to it for that sort of like everyone gets a participation trophy aspect of it. So I'm going to mull on that one. Also, there was a body camera footage that came out in Florida that, gosh, it's so unfortunate. So it's a police shooting. Thankfully, no one was killed. But it sounds like this officer who's since resigned mistook the sound of falling acorns for gunfire and opened fire on the suspect.
Okaloosa County Deputy Jesse Hernandez reportedly claimed it was this noise that he thought was the detained suspect shooting at him.
Shots fired! Shots fired!
Yeah, so the suspect had already been handcuffed, searched, detained, and put in the police cruiser.
Yeah.
And I guess while the officers were kind of wrapping up stuff on the scene, which someone had called in reporting that this young man had stolen their car, and that's kind of why we're here. But I guess while he's outside of the patrol car, he hears what he thinks is somebody opening fire on him. And it's actually the sound of like acorn nuts falling on a vehicle nearby him. And he drops, rolls, shouts, shots fired, the whole thing. And him and, from what I've read, one of his partners on the scene also opened fire on the vehicle, on his own patrol car, and just unloaded on it. And thankfully, the person in the back was not hit. They're just, I'm sure they're going through a lot of mental stuff with that whole scenario. But they pulled him back out, searched him, and still found no firearms. So this week, they released that body cam footage for us to see, so you can see the whole thing. But man, it's so unfortunate, because I love police officers and I know they have a really difficult job, and being put in a position where you can mistake something like that and possibly have taken someone's life. I don't know. Ugh. It's just a hard thing to think about.
I mean, I have a couple issues with it. And again, I hesitate to put myself in the position of a police officer who's actually there in the moment, feels like their life's in jeopardy. I think it speaks to like how on edge a lot of officers are in this current climate. But there's a couple things I just don't understand. The sound to me does not sound like gunfire. Again, this is like, you know, I understand, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking. But also, if you don't know where that quote unquote gunfire is coming from, to automatically start firing into the back of the vehicle when they clearly didn't see him like in the vehicle with a gun, that seems like a real jump to conclusions. What if the gunfire was coming from somewhere else on the street or something? And so just your first reaction to fire into the back of a vehicle that you just put a handcuffed person in is really weird to me. So anyway, it's important to look critically at these things when they do happen. I feel for police officers, but this is just a wild scenario. So Miranda, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, and that officer also said he thought he got hit by a bullet.
Well, he said his legs went numb, so he thought he got hit by a bullet. It's very sad.
He didn't. Nothing hit him, unless it was an acorn.
Yeah.
Not exactly sad. Florida's finest right there.
We had somebody say, this is a good point. Leah says, I can't help but think that this officer is experiencing PTSD.
Well, that's possible.
Maybe,
okay, maybe I should make fun of him.
More support.
Possibly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have a lot of military veterans who are police officers, but also, like, yeah, if you've got a PTSD issue, it's something as a police officer, it's very important to get help with, because that can't be a situation where you fly off the handle so much, even if it's because of that, and that's just an assumption that you shoot into the back of a vehicle. All right, before we get to questions and comments, my power was out for 16 hours last night.
I feel for you, man, I also know you have a very handy husband that
fired
let you
the generator.
Go without electricity.
He secretly loves it. He's like wiring stuff all through the house, getting everything plugged in, and
he's got his flashlight
head on. He's very
headlight.
Fun. He's stringing things over to the neighbors to help them out. Mm-hmm. But you know what was working just fine?
Your gas.
My gas stove. Just cooking up my
but not
ground,
your gas fireplace.
Ground chicken. Well, our gas fireplace was already broken pre issue. So just ridiculous though. And then what did we do? We ran our gas powered generator all night long. All night.
To run the air conditioning?
No. No. We ran our gas powered generator to keep the fridges plugged in.
I know,
because Mike likes to keep it cold.
Mike likes it.
And
real
then
cold,
a couple lamps. And that's about it. But yeah, so tell me again that you want to ban gas hookups for PSE. What am I going to do? What actually is your expectation? That people just freeze? Is that your expectation? I guess I don't get it.
There appears to be no plan, because they keep sending out these things saying they need people to cut back on their energy use.
Yeah.
Let's plug in all our cars.
And then one tree falls and it takes you 16 hours to get power back on?
Yikes. Okay.
Anyway, questions and comments.
I think a few more than one fell, though, but...
On teachers, Rachel says, you couldn't pay me to put a child in public schools nowadays. They're not teaching, they're indoctrinating, and it sickens me. Deanne says, why educators don't want non-indoctrinated teachers allowed into the cult? Summer says, and Summer, I'm curious where you're from, because you said, our teachers here are more than qualified to teach kids from such diverse backgrounds. My kids are thriving here, a lot more challenging in academics and far less indoctrination. I'm assuming you're not in Washington, so I'm curious where you are. UW football fan says it's hard. So this is on the other bill where we talked about the push to add all this inclusive curriculum in schools. UW football fan says it's hard to learn when kids are picking on you because you're trans. And I assume that is a response to my assertion that it is not the job of like schools to make kids feel comfortable in their sexuality or whatever it is. But there's already rules against bullying. So it doesn't matter what you're bullying a fellow student on, whether you're bullying them because their hair color or because they're trans or because you don't like the backpack that they brought to school. Yeah, schools need to deal with that behavior. But the idea that unless you include like trans positive curriculum, that bullying is, you know, that bullying will stop or something. I mean, these are kids. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. All right. Y says on the license plate reader issue, a couple points in this regard. Y says, I thought it was already illegal to obscure your license plate. And the analog detectorist says back in 1990, when I was a police officer, there was already an RCW prohibiting the covering of the plate in any way. So what truly are they creating with this bill? They're creating more hidden measures. But I think the caveat here is that this is see-through. So it's a piece of plastic that technically isn't covering anything. And so I understand that maybe people would try to argue that. And so you need something specific mm-hmm. to plastic license plate covers. Does that make sense? Let me see here. Jesse Adventure with a $1.99 super chat. Great episode. Keep up the great work. Thank you. Shelly on the license plate covers. You need these plastic covers in Tacoma. Without them, your plates are easier to steal.
Yeah, a lot of people said they have locked plate.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't, because there are plastic covers you can buy online that aren't mm-hmm. designed to obscure your license plate. On the question of would you welcome migrants into your home, CP says absolutely not. I don't even want some family to stay over. Oh, that's really true. Country Guy says there's a lot of room in the White House and the Naval Observatory. Yeah, when they start bringing migrants into the White House, then sure, I'll take them into my house. On the cop who mistook falling acorns for gunfire, Egomorph 2 says, Acorn Pop was a bad dude.
I mean, you hear it exactly in Biden's voice when you
Corn Pop
read that.
Was a bad
Corn
dude.
Pop. He was a bad dude.
Leah says, I can't help but think this officer is experiencing PTSD. Yeah, we read that one. So, okay, good comments today. In our closing sanity check, Governor Jay Inslee is once again talking about all the wonderful things he's done for working class people. On his Instagram account, which I follow so you don't have to, Governor Inslee is once again touting his working family tax credit by forcing a Washingtonian to awkwardly stand next to him and tell him how great he is.
Tell me how this is working for you, Priscilla.
Well, I'm a single mother and I'm a hard worker, and this is helpful not just to my family but for all the other low-income working families in the state of Washington, and we are very grateful for that. It was a surprise. I didn't even remember from last year, but I thought that was just 1 year, and just filing taxes today and, you know, getting that extra help is really gonna help our family, so thank you.
You have how many kids?
I have two boys.
Two boys, yeah. Okay. So. Your income is less than $60,000
yes.
with two kids, so you qualify for this benefit.
I did. Yes.
And it's about $900, is that right?
$940.
$940. Yes. So you get a tax break, in essence, of $940.
Yes, and very grateful and happy to find out I qualified. So.
Well, we're really happy about being able to do this. It's bringing a little more equity to our society, helping people.
And if the camera just panned over to the left, you'd see someone holding her at gunpoint to say that in front of the governor.
So scripted.
So scripted. You know what, Governor Inslee? You wouldn't have to give them a tax break if you didn't tax them so damn much in the first place. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Cliff Mass is our guest on Sundays with Subscribers this week. A guy who is not given the time of day from the mainstream media to talk about climate change from a factual standpoint. So we're going to talk to him about it. So if you're not a subscriber already, you can join us by signing up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. It's just $5 a month, and you can support us during this critical election year. So we'll see subscribers on Sunday. We'll have a new episode of Politics Unpacked for you tomorrow morning, and we'll see the rest of you back on the show Monday at noon.